This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Tracom Multimedia Studios just southwest of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. Jeremy Scott with you. It's going to be another great show, I'll tell you that much. Jackson Lee from Rice Race Prep in the F1600 class joins us, talks about where he started, basically what he wants to do from here on out, also his famous connection into motorsports. Then NZR Consulting's Tony Kottman joins us. He is the track designer for the Nashville Street Circuit that was just announced earlier this week, and we'll talk about what he does to go into track design, why he chose the design he did, and what he's doing now that Indy Lights is kind of on a hiatus this season. Also, Charlie Ante, our driver analyst, dives in. We're going to be talking about some IndyCar stuff, what the week that was at the Honda Indy 200, and we'll dive into the future, talk about some other news. As always, at Inside Open Wheel on Twitter, Inside Open Wheel on Facebook, InsideOpenWheel@gmail.com is one way to get a hold of us. Google Voice voicemail, 815-714-9260. It's 815-714-9260. That's the other way to get a hold of us. So, the big news, of course, obviously, the Nashville Street Circuit, it will be running next year, the first weekend in August. So it'll be running around Nissan Park and into downtown. We'll talk more about that with Tony Kottman, but huge news as we get another race. Jimmy Johnson will be running it. As he said, his races go from 12 to 13 next season, so that will be very interesting to see how that works. I, for one, am excited because it's a good-looking course. I think it looks like the Ebolodrome. Charlie, well, he doesn't like it. We'll talk more with him on why Debbie Downer doesn't like it. Also, we are getting word that Scott McLaughlin is doing all he can right now to come over to the States to run at least the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. And he might even run some IndyCar and NASCAR races next season. We'll dive into that as well. We had Scott McLaughlin on earlier this year, and he said he wanted to come over here. It seemed like it, but obviously his priorities this year are with supercars. And I'll tell you what, he's got a fight on his hands because it's a fight between Shane Van Gisbergen and Jamie Wincup for the top three in the supercar championship. So that'll be very interesting as well. Also, the numbers for the IndyCar weekend came out. 600,000 houses both days, and it's interesting because it was 600,000 households during kickoff for the NFL football. Think about that for a second. All right, so bodes well for IndyCar. I will say that, and I do expect that number to rise. Hopefully, now that all but one of the three races are going to be on NBC. You're going to see the first Harvest GP race on USA Network, which, if you remember, one of the years during the Olympics, that's what channel the races were on at one point. And the final two races of the season will conclude on NBC. Hopefully, we'll see another barn burner of a championship like we have seen the past several years in IndyCar competition, though with Scott Dixon basically going to run away and hide, I don't think that's going to happen. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Jackson Lee joins us to talk about his racing career.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, we've been kind of sitting back and letting Formula Race Promotions get their season into a little bit of a break, as we've been having a lot of IndyCar and FR, America's F4 news. But now that everybody's kind of slowed down a little bit, we're happy to welcome Jackson Lee into the show. His family comes from a media background, especially his dad. Jackson, I followed your career a lot through your dad, by the way, so it's great to see that the success you've been having. But let's talk about your start in F1600. I believe this is your first full season, correct?
In F1600, correct. Okay. Last year, I did the full season in the Lucas Oil Formula Car Series, but this would be my first full season kind of with my own team to really learn how to get kind of on my own feet in racing, rather than in the Lucas Oil series where you'd have a coach with the series in every corner which was great, and I got to learn a lot, but this has been a new experience to really be on my own.
Now, not many drivers we've had have run, actually, you're the first driver that's run the Lucas Oil Racing Series, so let's dive into that a little bit, talk about what it is, for those who aren't familiar, because, you know, there is a Skip Barber Series, and a separate racing school racing series that started a couple of years ago with Lucas Oil.
Yeah, so the Lucas Oil Formula Car Series is very similar to the old Skip Barber Series, and it's a lot of the same personnel as well. But it's an arrive and drive series. All the cars are the same, which makes for great competition, and it really lets the drivers shine rather than the cars. But it's great because, as I said earlier, they've got an instructor in each corner, and they've got onboard video, and they've got telemetry. So you come off the track, and they really work with you to really prepare you for the next level. And on the track with driving skills, but off the track as well, they'll do interviews after each race. And it's just a really great opportunity to really develop as a driver.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't know which car you're getting into until just before that first practice session, correct?
Correct. So they'll do a pill draw at the beginning of each event. So it's a different car each race. And they do the best they can to keep the cars equal and to really keep the competition as close as they can.
And, you know, if anyone's driven rental cars, you know, it's hard to keep something equal. So to have something like that is really cool. Last year, fourth in the championship, 2 wins, 6 podiums, a pole position, 3 fast laps. Now, how similar is this Lucas Oil Formula Car Series compared to your F1600?
It definitely has its similarities, but the biggest difference that I'm noticing is just in the way you can drive the tires in the F1600. The Lucas Oil cars had, it wasn't a full radial, but kind of a semi-slick that you really could slide the car a little bit and it would give a little more. Whereas here in the F1600 series, you have a lot more grip and you really have to drive the car a little bit harder and get more out of the tires. And on top of that, there's an H-pattern manual in the F1600, whereas I had paddle shifters in the Lucas cars, which really spoiled me. When I first got into the F1600s, I noticed I was missing a lot of shifts, and it took me a while to adapt to that. But other than that, the cars are fairly similar. They race a lot alike. It's big pack racing in both series, so it hasn't been too much of a learning curve, but there's definitely a little bit I had to pick up.
And we'll talk about that close pack racing, because you were involved in a couple of close finishes this season for F1600. But I want to get back to the Lucas Oil Formula Race Car Series for those who are interested in it. What tracks do they race at, and how many of them are similar to what you're racing in now in F1600?
So they've switched up the schedule a little bit for this year. I know last year I raced on a lot of the IndyCar tracks, and a few of them that I've raced on this year. I know we went to Mid-Ohio, Road America, Sebring, VIR, and it's a lot of the tracks that I've raced on this year. We've gone to Mid-Ohio and VIR already. But they give you a lot of opportunities to be able to do tracks that you would do in the road to Indy as you go on through your career. So when I get to those tracks, it wouldn't be my first time, and I've already got some experience on them.
And that helps, especially because you have such a good team in Rice Race Prep. You have such a fast teammate in Simon Sykes, and not to mention you're racing up against some of the top teams in 1600, like a Team Pelfrey. And you have to be on your game right from the word go, because if you're not, you're just going to get swallowed up in those first couple practice sessions.
Yeah, and Greg Rice has done a great job of helping prepare me for the series, along with Simon, who's got a bit more experience than me. The entire team have really helped me with adapting to this new car and the new series. It's been great to be able to learn off of all the experience that Greg Rice brings to the team, and all of Simon's experience and just the little tips that he can give me here and there. It's just been a great opportunity. I think this was definitely the right choice to go with Rice Race.
Jackson Lee joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. All right, we'll move forward to this season. It's been an interesting season, to say the least. You've had to, you know, race your teammate, but as we talked about that close racing, you yourself were involved in a couple of very close finishes. I believe they were the closest in 1600 history, if I'm correct?
Correct. The race monitor said that the finish between me and my teammate at VIR was down to 0.001. And it was funny because we finished the race and I'm on the radio, who won, who got it. And it took about 3/4 of the in lap to find out who won. And at first they told me that I had won. So we came off the track. I was all excited. We did our podium. And then after we came down from that, they looked at the photos and said, oh no, it's actually Simon who'd won. Oh. And it was by just barely a few inches. I mean, I haven't seen anything like it for a while, but then we had to go up and redo the podium. So it was a very interesting experience after that race. But the pack racing has been just so close all year, and it's been a great learning experience to really learn how to drive in packs like that and be able to race other drivers closely and be clean at the same time.
You know, yeah, seeing the picture, because a couple sources sent me, you know, the final picture, and it had a feel of if you remember the old IRL races where they were packing nose to nose at the finish. So it had that feel to it.
Yeah.
At the end. So,
yeah, definitely. Definitely is very, very close. And it's very like a close racing just because of like the way the draft works and all that. It's been great for learning.
Well, and you started your season with Rice Race Prep, actually at Road America, a great ground to learn how to draft at the famous June Sprints. A little bit different format than what you're used to, but talk about what your experience was like racing with some of the top 1600 racers just in the country, period.
Well, yeah, the June Sprints wasn't originally part of our schedule. We had a test date around there that got canceled because of the weather, so we decided just to do that instead, just to prepare us for the season. And that was a lot of fun. And there was definitely some great competition there. And along with FRP, these drivers are just, again, as I've been saying, learning against these drivers and racing against the tough competition has really been beneficial. And I'm learning stuff every race just by watching how they drive and thinking about what I can do to beat that It's been the biggest part of the F1600 series and what I've learned the most.
Now, you've got one more weekend. It's at Pittsburgh. But what are you doing right now in this long layoff? Because it's almost a month and a half, 2 months between races.
So right now, we're really trying to focus on next season. We are doing the best we can to line up some testing in USF 2000. And on top of that, I've got some sports car opportunities that I might do some testing in. But the main focus is trying to get myself ready to jump into jump into USF 2000 next year. And I want to make sure that I've got a lot of testing done this year and leading into next season so that I can be quick right off the bat.
And let's talk about that. Now that you've won in 1600, I mean, you want to go to USF 2000, but if a sports car deal presented itself in front of you, you're not going to say no, obviously, right?
Correct. Yeah, I'll drive anything that I can at this point. But as my career path, the plan is to do USF 2000. But yes, if I get a sports car opportunity, I'm taking whatever I can drive.
Now, for those who don't know, Jackson Lee's dad is Kevin Lee. He's somebody who I've looked up to as a young broadcaster myself to learn how to be a broadcaster. But how much help has your dad given you, and with your dad's connections in motorsports, how much has that helped you in your career?
Yeah, he's been an amazing help, and he'll even admit there's not much that he can really do driving-wise, but as far as just teaching me how I need to present myself on the media side, and then also, as you said, those connections he's given me has been probably the biggest help out of anyone in my career. He's been able to get me a lot of opportunities to just learn how I need to present myself and how to represent different brands on the media side.
Yeah, that's a huge help, especially in this day and age. You know, I've worked with the younger drivers in my position, and that's the one thing you get they're kids basically, younger than you, who come up to F2000. And it's like, they've never done this before because they're in karting, so they're not going to have that experience. Granted, you've got guys like Rob Howden, going out and helping these kids, but they're all of a sudden thrust into the spotlight and they've got cameras in front of their faces. So to have your dad there is a huge help.
Yeah, it's definitely been a big help. And he does a lot. He's really preached to me over my career that if I want to be a race car driver, almost more important than my driving, I have to be able to represent myself. And it's been a big help to be able to learn how to do that the right way.
Yeah, it has. And outside of racing. Now, I know a lot of drivers, they like, yeah, I want to go racing. But there are a couple who said, you know, I have this thing I want to do in case, you know, this racing doesn't pan out. So say racing doesn't pan out. What do you have in mind for the future?
Well, my passion has definitely always been racing, and I'm going to do the best I can to make sure I have a career in racing, whether that's driving the car, or if not, I'm doing what I can to be able to have a engineering career in motorsports engineering as a backup plan.
Now, that's huge, because engineering, you know, a bunch of engineers, but as you know, as you've seen, as well as I have, seats sometimes are just hard to come by, especially, you know, bringing in sponsors. And you've had a lot of sponsors who have followed you from your quarter midget days into your karting, now into your 1600 days.
Correct. And I can't thank them enough. They've been a big help. The biggest one would be Caldwell Subways and Caldwell Realty. They've been amazing for helping me develop in my career and giving me the opportunities that I need. On top of that, I've had a lot of help after I moved up into Formula Cars, including Tenemic Coatings and Indiana Coating Specialist and Rising Star Racing. They've been an amazing help for just getting me the opportunities that I need. Without them, I mean, none of this would be possible, and I wouldn't be able to get to do what I love.
Now, if fans want to follow your career, find out more about you, how can they do so?
So I have my Twitter and Instagram, JacksonLee52, and then I also will post my sort of race highlights on YouTube. If you just search Jackson Lee Racing and then maybe FRPF 1600, I'll put race highlights of each event I go to on there. So I think those are great ways to stay followed.
Fantastic. Jackson Lee, good luck at it's pit race that's coming up, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I have so many schedules. It's like, okay, what race is next here? I don't want to say the wrong thing, upset the wrong series. But
yeah.
Pit race is coming up next at the end of October. We'll definitely check that out on Inside Open Wheel. Take care and enjoy this lovely fall weather we're having.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Coming up next, we're going to wrap up Mid-Ohio and talk about everything that went down here on Inside Open Wheel. The wait is over. Inside Open Wheel is now on Apple Podcasts. So no matter where you get your favorite podcast from, you can always get a new episode of Inside Open Wheel on that same program. Heck, you can even get a push notification right when we release new episodes. Once again, Inside Open Wheel, we're now on Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, if you haven't been paying attention, the newest race is the Music City Grand Prix. It's going to be taking place next year in Nashville. And joining us is the track designer. Tony Kottman joins us on Inside Open Wheel. Tony, I've got to say this. Once again, you knocked it out of the park for track design.
Yeah, you know, we were pretty lucky with what we had to work with, and we were lucky that we were allowed to use the street that we really wanted to, and obviously the bridge. So definitely a unique situation.
And I definitely want to talk about how you go into making a road course, you know, designing a street course. But for those who haven't seen it, the track incorporates both a lot of the roads around the Nissan Stadium, and also incorporates two long straights. They both go over the river, and I've got to say, that is probably one of the coolest features of that racetrack, because, correct me if I'm wrong, the last North American track that went over the river was Columbus back in the 80s, correct?
Before my time, I wasn't over here then, so you're probably right. Okay. I don't even remember.
Because I know that you also had Valencia over in Europe that, you know, went over the canal, but nonetheless, it's a great facility. You guys kept it under wraps for about 5 years. When did things start coming into place? Was it when Roger finally came on board and really pushed this Nashville idea?
It had been brewing behind the scenes for probably 3 years. And at that time, they went through some different administrations in the city, different mayors. And early on, we couldn't really get the track how we wanted it anyway. And it's just no point in building the track if you don't like it. So we had some designs, but just none of them were going to work. And then a new administration came along, and we asked again if it was possible to use the bridge, and they were open to it under the right circumstances. So we were lucky enough to then and create a real fantastic track.
Now, you've obviously been at the facility several times. How many times did it take for you to finally get the stadium portion right, the way you wanted it?
You know, the stadium portion is not too bad, right? It's just, it's around the car. Yeah. It's probably on Division 15, I think, now. And it's just difficult with everything going on down there. Pretty busy. There's obstacles to work around. So, you know, it needs to be from a racing standpoint. And we got a few modifications that we need to do, but it's going to work out fine.
And looking at a lot of the drivers who've already come out and talked about this track, they're in love with it. I'm looking at James Hinchcliffe's tweet, and he said, guys, we're racing over a friggin' bridge. My question is, what is the distance between turn 11 and turn 1? Because that looks like that's the longest straight right there.
Yeah, it is the longest straight. And believe it or not, it's only about 200 feet longer than the IMS straightaway.
Okay.
So, you know, IMS from turn 4 to turn 1 on the oval. So it's reasonably long, but just the way the track is and the two tracks, you know, going back and forth beside each other, I think makes it look really kind of accentuates the distance. But still, you know, for example, the distance is shorter, a little bit shorter than Road America straightaways.
And I know that also you talked about using the bridge. Was that because Bridgestone has their headquarters there in Nashville, so they obviously wanted to be a part of this race somehow?
Yeah, look, the reason we used the bridge is because I really, really, really wanted to use the bridge. and I think it's going to be, you know, an iconic feature of the track for the city. And it was probably, in my or our opinion, the best way to showcase the city. Whenever you see that bridge, you're going to know exactly where that track is. And, you know, that's a lot different than running around the stadium or in a car park or anything like that, which could be anywhere. So, you know, it not only helps you recognize what city you're racing in, it provided us with the opportunity to build what I think will be a really good raceable track, which is most important.
Tony Kama joins us on Inside Open Wheel. Now, we know you've also designed a lot of the tracks for IndyCar. You helped out with Portland, make sure that that was up to snuff. But I want to talk about street courses. How do you go about designing a street course first off? And then, you know, obviously you're going to have to make revisions down the road because, you know, for safety and for municipal reasons.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's probably three key things, right? Obviously, number one, you have to design something that's safe. Number two, it needs to be, if possible, challenging to both the drivers and the teams. And number three, it needs to provide a good spectacle for the fans and for television. So, you know, there's some parameters that you look for. And usually when I go to a city, I look for something that's either, you know, I look for like the gotta have. I gotta have this piece of road, or I gotta have this corner, and then try and build around there. Because you can imagine, you know, this wasn't the first place we started looking at the city necessarily. We ended up here, but we've been all over the place trying to figure out, you know, where would be the best opportunity. And once you get the racetrack kind of sorted out, then it's what kind of amenities do you have around, and you know, what kind of infrastructure is there to support the event and find enough room for grandstands and suites and teams and things like that. They just kind of build on each other. So, you know, it's just lucky in the situation where you're downtown, but you're not really right downtown. So it worked out fine.
Right, because I know that a lot of people here in Chicago are still... I see fantasy tracks about downtown Chicago and Lakeshore Drive and all that, so... You've got to take into account what's going to impact people the least. And you have the unique position, too, of you've been an engineer. You've been race control for several race series, so you know what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely lucky being on the team side and the series side at some point, and then now on this side. Doesn't mean to say, I haven't made mistakes. Trust me, I have. But I've got a pretty good idea of what can make a good track. And at the end of the day, everybody has their opinions based on a piece of paper and the shape of it and what they see. But this one, there's just something good about it. And I feel it's a winner. Not just necessarily the cool aspect of it, but I think it'll be really, really raceable. For example, when you come off the bridge and come down to turn one, I mean, it's as wide as, that passing zone is as wide as going into turn one at Cleveland. It's 80 foot wide. Oh. And those are the little things that you don't see on the drawing, but I know now when IndyCar drivers are 5 or 6 wide going into one at the start of the race, it'll be pretty spectacular.
Don't say those nasty words, turn one at Cleveland. Come on. I still miss watching that race on TV. What else is coming through the pipeline track-wise? Are we going to see any safety modifications in the coming years, or are we okay with most of our layouts?
Look, there's always tweaks. Obviously one of my big jobs is safety related to racetracks, and we're always changing and tweaking and whether it's the street circuit or permanent road courses, there's always a constant list of things going on. Probably one of the most hated guys for the promoter because he's always spending money, right? And as for new circuits coming along, I don't know. There's always opportunities here and there, but we now have to find the right group like they have at Nashville. And put the funding together is obviously, it's a difficult proposition, especially in today's world.
All right, so let's talk about Indy Lights. It's been a light work year for you, obviously, because Indy Lights is on a sabbatical for 2020. So what have you been doing other than track designing and safety to keep yourself busy?
Yeah, I mean, that's my primary role, and that's what, it doesn't stop, right, just because we haven't raced necessarily. I spend a lot of time on that. Little time on Indy Lights and with Dan, and figuring out where it's going to go in the future, and the Road to Indy series, which I enjoy working with on the weekends, try and assist where I can and lend a bit of help and expertise in some areas. So we're still pretty busy, but obviously the focus is going to shift a little now.
Any truth to the rumor that Roger Penske still wants to have every Indy, NTT IndyCar Series team have at least one Indy Lights team to bump up the numbers a little bit?
Yeah, I've heard that, or only what I've read, obviously. But look, that's between him and Dan, and where they want to take the direction of Lights. And I think it's a great proving ground or training ground for IndyCar. And my personal opinion is it's necessary. It's a necessary step in the ladder, and wherever they agree to take it, I'm sure they'll make the right decision.
Well, Tony, thanks for taking time with us on such short notice. I'm really looking forward to getting down there. I've told my wife, I'm like, we're probably going to book a hotel or a campsite or something, because this is a cool little track.
Yeah, it'll be a good one, and hope everybody enjoys it. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, man. We'll talk to you later. Coming up next, Charlie Ante joins us. We break down the weekend in IndyCar and the Open Wheel news here on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, what a wild weekend at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, otherwise normally known as the Scott Dixon Sports Car Course, with the Scott Dixon Indy 200. Oh, I'm sorry, that's the Honda Indy 200. Charlie Ante joins us, and I have to say this. That was a surprise to not see the typical Scott Dixon show we normally see at the track outside of Steam Corners, Ohio.
Yeah, it was very surprising. I mean, I think he had problems all weekend, didn't he?
Well, he did, and there was some Scott Dixon-like moments. We'll talk about those in a second, but I've got to say this. Herdamania 2.0 is turning out fantastic. It's great to see the young Herda do well. Granted, he's in good equipment, but even if he wasn't in good equipment, I still think we'd see him up near the front like we're seeing Pato O'Ward and Oliver Askew.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's with Andretti, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, there's not as much of a fine line between the top teams and the sort of mid pack teams as there have been in the past, even. So it's great to see some of these more kind of mid pack teams making good performances.
It really is. And, you know, once again, obviously being somebody who, you know, that's from their hometown, but seeing, you know, the coin drivers do quite well. You know, Meyershank Racing had a strong weekend as well. It's refreshing to see these mid-pack teams do well. And I think we're going to have another one next year. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But Will Power basically said, I've got to go out and have a good race and drive in anger. Showed why he's one of the best racers still in the IndyCar paddock in race one.
Yeah. When was the last time he had a win? Because I feel like, I mean, we've been talking a lot this season about Alexander Rossi's bad luck. But, I mean, Will Power, I feel like every time he's been up towards the front, he's had something stupid go wrong.
And that's another driver who needed a good weekend, and he got it. So that's the good news. Give me 1 second. Oh, this is interesting. I forgot that he raced for Carlin in Formula Renault 3.5. The stuff you dig up on Wikipedia. The last time he got a win was at Portland last year.
Mm-hmm.
So he is on a season streak of, let's see here, 14 seasons with a win.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic.
How many was that? Was that his only win last year, or did he get more?
No, he got he won at Pocono and he won at Portland.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he was on the podium at St. Pete, finished fifth at the 500, third at the second Detroit race, second at Road America. God, I forgot that he finished second at Road America last year. That was the Alexander Rossi show, if I remember that. But he finished the last five races, fourth at Mid Ohio, first at Pocono. 22nd at Gateway, first in Portland, and second at Laguna. WeatherTech Raceway, Laguna Seca.
So he's been up there. I guess he. I guess my impression is inaccurate.
Well, it's hard.
Not incorrect.
It's not hard to come with that when you have a driver like Scott Dixon, you know, coming out and winning the first three races. I mean, here's his results of the season so far: 13th at Texas, 20th at the first road course race at Indy, second at the first Road America race, 11th at the second one. Iowa one was 21st, second on Iowa two, the 500, 14th, 17th, the first Gateway race, and third in the second one. So, I mean, it's not been a willpower like year, but this really has been a strange year when you have a driver like Scott Dixon just going out and dominating, where I don't know about you, but I'm used to, when I think of IndyCar, I'm used to close points finishes.
Yeah, and even with those results, he's still in fifth place in the championship.
Yeah. Isn't that disgusting?
Yeah, that's interesting. Pato O'Ward is in third.
Yeah, Pato O'Ward's in third, and he hasn't won a race yet. Think about that. I think that here's the thing, okay? When Pato O'Ward wins, it's going to, and the same thing like I said with Herta, the wins are just going to come hand over fist. Of course, now we know that anytime Herta qualifies on the pole, that he's going to win it and, you know, flat out dominate the race, as we saw in race number two. But no, there's no race report for, I wonder if there will be a race report here. Anyway, we know that when he dominates, he dominates. That's when he's on the pole. So, but yeah, Scott Dixon really, I gotta get the results, but go ahead. Sorry. I said, go ahead.
I wasn't gonna say anything.
Okay, so here we go. Here's race number, so I can get race number one. There's race number one. So Will Power, your winner, Joseph Newgarden second, Alexander Rossi third, Graham Rahal fourth, Hunter Ray 5th, Felix Rosenquist 6th, Jack Harvey 7th, 8th to Renus VK. That's another driver who I'm really surprised is doing well so far this year is Renus VK. And that's not saying anything about Ed Carpenter equipment. We've seen over the past couple of years when you put a capable road course racer in that 20 car or in the 21 car, they're going to do well. And with Renus being a young rookie, little surprising, yes, but it's been a refreshing surprise to see that coming out of the Ed Carpenter stable.
Is Renus the one that we were talking about in Texas, the first,
yes.
I think it was the first race this year?
Yeah, that's where he took himself out in Alex Palou.
And Carpenter was like, I told him not to do that, and he did it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So it looks like he's sort of rebounded from that. That's good.
Yeah, don't do the things. I did the thing, guys. 9th Colton Herta, 10th Scott Dixon. Yeah, he didn't even lead a lap race one. Will Power had the most with 66 laps. Rossi with 5, Colton Herta with 4. And I was thinking after the race on Saturday, I'm like, okay, you know, Rossi 3rd. That's a pretty good result for him, you know. You know, it's a turnaround for him. Then you go to Sunday, Colton Herta your winner. Rossi 2nd, Hunter Ray 3rd. So Andretti Autosport locks out the podium. They lock out the top 5 as Graham Murray Hall finishes 4th, Marcus Ericsson 5th, Pagano 6th, Will Power 7th, Joseph Newgarden 8th, Pat O'Ward 9th, and Dixon another 10th place finish. Newgarden's able to close up the gap, but barring a couple of catastrophic failures at the Harvest GP, I'm thinking all Dixon has to do at this point is just start the St. Petersburg Grand Prix and he's the champion.
That's the last race left, right? Or yeah. No, they have the race at Indy too.
That's what I mean, the Harvest Grand Prix. Yeah, the doubleheader at the beginning of October.
Right. I mean, seeing performances like this from Scott Dixon is very unusual, of course. So. Yeah. I think, you know, easy money is still on him to win the championship.
And also, you know, not to mention that he spun on his own. When have you seen that out of him? I can't even.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that in his kart days.
Yeah, it's really unusual. That was a pretty stunning thing to see.
Yeah, because I was telling you off the air, I had to work Sunday. My wife, Emily, had the TV on. She was thankful it was on NBC, so she had the race on. And I heard her go, oh, my God. 10 seconds later, I heard IndyCar Radio talking about it. And about 15 seconds later, I saw it on TV. So it was very, very odd.
Yeah, and less odd, but still kind of surprising, is Marco Andretti had an incident in the same corner. And oh, it was kind of the same thing. I think he dropped the wheel on entry and Dixon did it on exit. But still, you know, it's those aren't really mistakes that you see IndyCar drivers make that often.
Yeah, and they both were lucky that driver's left arm code didn't come out and smack them, because that's what normally mm-hmm. happens when you go off that far. You get the arm code come out and whack you. But yeah, they both got very lucky. I have to say this. Let's talk about that incident in Madness on Sunday. I want to get your thoughts on it. And the incident we're talking about is at the start when you had Colton Herta and I almost said Bourdais. No, it's not Bourdais. Santino Ferrucci go side by side into turn 4. Ferrucci had the high line, so he went high, got in the marbles, ended up sliding off into the grass, backing into Palou and Rosenquist, effectively ending both of their races. Charlie, you've raced there. We've been there multiple times. Let's get your opinion on that start.
I have to be honest. I actually didn't see the start.
All right. So during the commercial break, we'll take a look at the start, and we will discuss that next time by. But I have to say this. Complete boneheaded move. And it's like I said on Twitter. I've seen multiple series race there. You don't go in the gray and expect to survive going, you know, coming out of China Beach. So,
we'll take a look, and I'll give my opinion on the other side.
Yeah, well, we'll do that on the other side here on Inside Open Wheel. The wait is over. Inside Open Wheel is now on Apple Podcasts. So no matter where you get your favorite podcast from, you can always get a new episode of Inside Open Wheel on that same program. Heck, you can even get a push notification right when we release new episodes. Once again, Inside Open Wheel, we're now on Apple Podcasts.
Actually,
this is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
All right, so Charlie's had some time to take a look at that incident we talked about. It's the starting incident between Santino Ferrucci and pole sitter Colton Herta. What's your verdict?
Yeah, I mean, he went a little bit too wide. Maybe he got squeezed a little bit, but he dropped the wheel, and then it kind of sucks you off there. And then it's, you know, you're going uphill, and it's a really tight left-hander off camber, and you know, there's a lot going on, and you're desperate to get back on the track because you're going to be really slow through that left-hander. It sucks that he just kind of barreled back onto the track and took out two other cars. So yeah, I think, I mean, you said he got a basically an end of line penalty.
Yeah, tailing Charlie. Yeah,
I think that, you know, that's a little bit light. I probably would have had him do a drive through or maybe even a stop and go. I think you said you suggested a minute.
Yeah, stop and hold plus 30 seconds for each car.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, it's one of those, like, that might be a little bit harsh, but if they did it, I probably wouldn't. I would be like, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
And if you want to complain about Charlie's analogy about what happens when you slide off at China Beach, it's charlieanti@insideopenwheel.com. Don't forward that stuff off to me, because I'll just forward it off to him. Yeah, and, you know, the thing that I found interesting, you had two former drivers. One is a champion, another race, I think, did... No, Townsend was a test driver for Formula One, correct?
I don't know.
I got to look at that. Anyway, both have plenty of experience in open wheel, and they both pinned it on Colton Herta. Colton had the line. He's the pole sitter.
I would have to take a... I'll take a closer look at it here.
Yeah, take a look at that. I would...
I mean, he does have... Let's see. So they're side by side. Yeah, you know what? Colton does kind of squeeze, and he doesn't really give him any room.
Right.
I mean, Ferrucci is beside him through the first turn.
Right.
Like squarely beside him. Maybe a foot or two behind. And I think if there's a car next to you at that, like, to that extent, you got to leave him some room. So I can see their argument that, okay. What's his name? I'm just blanking. That Herta squeezed him off.
All right, so maybe
I can buy that.
All right, so maybe I should. That's something I should have asked our race director that we had on earlier, Tony Kottman. By the way, that was fantastic getting Tony on at the last minute. the story behind that one was, I saw that he didn't say anything to Miller, so I shot him an email, and I'm like, yeah, I know you're not talking to Miller, but after a possible announcement that may or may not be happening tomorrow, let's talk about this. So, I've known Tony since the Champ Car days. That's just, you know, and Tony's a great guy, so really happy for him. We'll talk about Nashville in a little bit, but I want to get back to Mid-Ohio. Twin 75 lappers. You know how tough that track is, and you've run as many as three races in one weekend. So I mean, what does a driver, like, you know, an IndyCar driver go through, knowing that they have to do two physically demanding races?
Well, first of all, I would say that my running three races in a Formula 1600 car in one weekend is nowhere near comparable to running even one IndyCar race in a weekend.
Throw some wings on it then. Come on, man.
You know what? Throwing some wings on it wouldn't really make it that much more physical. The F2000 cars are basically my car with wings and a slightly bigger engine, and they're not that much more physical. I mean, I'm not in the best shape in the world. The last time I raced a go-kart was 5 years ago. I did five laps and I couldn't do it anymore. So that gives you an idea of what shape I'm in. And I can hop out of a Formula 1600 car after half an hour and be perfectly fine. Like, maybe a little bit, not winded, but like maybe a little fatigue, but not so much so. So they're really not physical cars to drive at all. And an Indy car is just on a completely different level.
We need to get you in an Indy car to test it.
Yeah, that's something I'd be willing to do for the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what? We do know some people, so we need to pull our connections together. See, maybe even at least a champ car or something like that. Something that really, if something happens, wouldn't be an issue. All right, here are your.
I would accept a champ car in lieu of an actual current Indy car.
I think I would too. I agree. I have to lose some extra ballast, as I told one driver over the weekend. Scott Dixon, your points leader, 456 points. To Joseph Newgarden's 384 points. Pat O'Ward, third with 338. Fourth, Colton Herta, 327. Will Power, that's fifth place for 306 points. If I could get to the Rookie of the Year points, I'd love to. Give me a second. I've got to go through stats. The stats. There's got to be a Rookie of the Year points. No, that's not what I need. Tell you what, though. The IndyCar website. Oh, there we go. IndyCar website. I think they've done a fantastic job with that. All right, here are your rookie points. Rinus VK leads with 224 points over Alex Palou's 185. Oliver Askew third with 181 points. Dalton Kellett fourth with 56 points. Fernando Alonso, two-time Formula One champion. He's still considered a rookie in IndyCar. Fifth with 18 points. Ben Hanley sixth with 14. Some driver from Australia, 10 points. He thinks he's an IndyCar driver. He thinks he's a stock car driver. Who knows?
James Davison is yes. There. Is he still a rookie?
That's the thing. I think they still have him under his rookie because he's only done a handful of Indy 500s.
He does. He's in last place in the rookies championship.
Yep. How many
Indy 500s can he do and still be considered a rookie?
That's I always thought it was seven races and you're no longer a rookie. And I think that's probably why Alonso's still a rookie, which I think's odd to begin with, so he'll be a rookie next time he comes over. Give me 1 second. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. He shouldn't be a rookie anymore because he's run 8 races already. He did lead 2 laps, though, in the 2017 500. I forgot about that. So. All right. So that wraps up Mid-Ohio. Other than Nashville, the big news out of the weekend, Sebastian Bourdais returns to full-time. Oh, it's going to be nice to have Bourdais back in the field. He will be running the number 14 for AJ Foyt Racing. And this is the second legacy team he's been a part of. Look at how well he did with Newman Haas. Oh, wait, they were already doing well. But you got to take a look at what he's done for the mid-pack teams. Came into Coyne, did well there. Went to KV Racing Technologies. He won a couple races. Went back to Coyne, won some races. Led the points for a little bit. Attempted a pole at the 500. We know how that ended up. I mean, you can't go off last season because last season was a very strange season for Dale Coyne Racing. They lost Craig Hampson. Was it last year they lost Craig Hampson? I have to think about that one. But it was just an off year for Coyne. And I've got to say the way Honda did him was pretty dirty. I feel bad for him, but he's got a home right now in JDC Motorsports and IMSA, doing well with the Cadillac. He's going to be racing the Harvest Grand Prix in a couple weeks for AJ Foyt Racing. They're going to bump up to a 3-car stable. I'm happy with Sebastian Bourdais coming back into the fold next season.
Yeah, I think it's great.
And I think it's going to help Dalton Kellett if he ends up still in the field. I wouldn't be surprised to see him battle for wins next year if he if he can get the team up to par.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, has Foyt Racing ever won a race?
Oh yeah, they won a race. I got to go back and look at that. It hasn't been in this modern era. I can say that. Let me see here. Yeah, I'm gonna do the Wikipedia thing.
So while you're doing that, I wanna bring to light something that I just noticed. I was looking at the IndyCar pictures on the rookie championship on their website.
Okay.
And the picture of Fernando Alonso, he looks like Scott Pruitt dressed up as Fernando Alonso.
Out of my family back home. I'm gonna take a look at that. Holy crap, he does.
Holy I know, right?
Crap. Oh, wow. So here's an interesting stat. I'm looking at the IndyCar. So AJ Foyt Racing started in 1979. They're the kart, basically. Mm-hmm. His best finish was a second in kart, which I think I find odd because Robbie Gordon was hot shoe then. When they went to IRL, Scott Sharp won for them at New Hampshire. Billy Boat was a winner, Texas. Kenny Brack, three-time winner in 98. He won the title for them. We know Kenny Brack won the 99 500. Ayrton Dare. No, I'm sorry. Takuma Sato was the last winner at Long Beach in 2013. That's right.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
That was Sato's first win, wasn't it?
Checking.
I'm really putting through your trivia paces.
You are. And yes, it was, because he won once at AJ Foyt, the 500 with Andretti, and then won Portland, Barber, Gateway, and then the 500 with Ray Hall Letterman. That's right. For some reason, I thought he won a race with Lotus, but he didn't. I'll tell you what, it's interesting to see. God, it's interesting to see some. I go back and watch some old F1 races, and it's still interesting to see Takuma Sato on the grid. It's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's fully embraced the IndyCar lifestyle, hasn't he?
Hey, I'm happy with it. You know, when he first said he was coming over to IndyCar, it's like, okay, you know, I liked watching him in Formula One. He was a good driver. I mean, granted, I'm a huge Kimi Raikkonen fan, but you know, it's just great to see someone like Takuma Sato come in there, and he's a fantastic personality for the series. I think that mm-hmm. the interactions I've had with him have been nothing but pleasant, and I would love to sit down and talk with him again. And his accent, still, that British Japanese accent, is so awesome.
Yeah, I think I don't know if he's ever my favorite driver, but I'd say he's a solid top five.
Oh, favorites. Easily.
Yeah, definitely. You know, definitely glad he's around.
I will admit, I was always a Kimi and JPM fan. You know, going through F1.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I always liked Sato. I mean, I felt that, you know, he did what he could in Jordan equipment at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no. I mean, having Sato in the series is fantastic, and hopefully Honda can get enough money to Ray Hall Letterman to keep him for at least one more year. Maybe I think he has more than 1 year left in him, but, mm-hmm. you know. Oh, speaking of one more year, Little Birdie told me, I can't remember if it was here on the show or if it was in confidence. I can't remember. Jay Howard has at least one more 500 left in him.
Hmm.
That'll be interesting. Yeah, I would love to see Jay Howard back in a 500 seat. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's get to the elephant in the room. Let's talk about your impressions of the Nashville circuit.
Well, first of all, I think I mentioned this last time that I'm a huge fan of street circuits.
Yes.
And so that said, it's a little weird. I mean, it looks funny. But you know, it's going to be interesting, to see how it works. I'm looking at it here on Google Earth. And it's around a stadium. So it's not exactly amongst the buildings, but, yeah, it'll be interesting. It's an unusual design. It kind of looks like a caricature of Olton Park.
Okay, I've never thought of that. Well, you know, here's the thing. The designer's Australian, so. Or...
Well, it's a British. Olton Park is a British track.
I know it is. Now, when I talked to Kottman, he said the one thing he wanted to do is he wanted to incorporate the bridges in the track design. So he was... Mm-hmm. You know, he was very happy to you know, that the city came in and said, yeah, you can do it. And I'm glad that the city was able to do it. But yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, it's, let me see. I think what my first impression of it, once I realized sort of the direction it goes, is that turn one, that's, after that long straightaway, I mean, it's a 90 degree, it's almost a 90 degree corner, but it's like, it's a wide road. So the radius is going to be pretty big.
Yeah,
it's going to be a really fast entry and it's probably going to be a pretty fast corner.
You want to know how big it is?
Sure.
90 feet, about as wide as turn one at Port Cleveland.
Oh boy.
Oh my. Oh my. As I told him, don't say those dirty words to me. I love you. You know I love me some Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's a little bit concerning. I'm sure they'll do something with that. It actually kind of reminds me of the time. So I was racing in Pro Mazda when they went to the Houston circuit for the first time in 2006.
Ah, yes, I remember that.
And do you remember so if you remember the circuit, kind of there's a like a long sweeping left-hander along the pit straight, and then you go into that chicane, and then right after that chicane, there's a really wide left-hander.
Yes. Well, remember, remember that chicane wasn't initially there. The reason why they put that there is to slow the champ cars down in turn one. Turn two now.
Because there's absolutely no runoff.
Right.
There was like some convention center right there, so they couldn't put any runoff.
Right.
And I remember. The Thursday before the race, you know, we would take the scooters around the track, and they had people there, like some of the drivers were there, and I think one of my coaches was saying, oh, they're thinking about throwing in a chicane, and then like they did it overnight.
Yep.
And yeah, so the next morning you go out there and there's a chicane there that wasn't there yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you know this there is an area there to make runoff. So that's not a problem, but it's probably something to keep in mind if they're going to make any modifications to that corner. Cause there could be some problems.
Well,
with it.
And I would rather have somebody like Tony Kottman work on this than Herman Tilk.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you know, my thoughts on his other than Coda, you know, my thoughts on his designs. There are only two designers that I would trust with a racetrack design. It's Tony Kottman and Chris Neifel. That's it. Maybe Alan Wilson, but I can't see him doing a street course. Because all it will be is just left and right. So it wouldn't be the odd, you know, South 6 at Autobahn or something like that.
Well, I think Alan Wilson doing a street circuit might be interesting.
Oh, yeah, I don't disagree.
But, I mean, it was looking again at the map of Nashville here. I mean, it's all just sort of intersecting grids. So it's... You know, I mean, I don't really know if there's anything more that could be done other than making like a Rock Island Grand Prix type track where it's just like an L shape, because you just don't really have that much to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know,
unless you did like what F1 did in Vietnam, where they kind of just plowed over a grassy area and drew their own circuit through the grass.
It's been done.
I don't think they were ever going to do that. Maybe you could do it with the parking lot.
It's been done before with the parking lot, as you say.
Actually, you know what? Now that I mention it, I think they did something like that with Houston.
Yeah, I think they did. Because, you know, because looking at the Houston map, there's a lot of grass there. So I went back to actually Alan Wilson's resume. He did do the Columbus road course, which is, if I remember correctly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, was the last North American street course that went over a river.
Hmm. That's interesting.
It's very interesting.
When I never heard that there was a street course there. When was that?
It was before our time in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I
figured that.
I'm going to send this to you so you have it. Come on.
Who was it? IndyCar that ran there, or
it
IMSA?
It was IMSA. I know that, and it was IMSA.
Let's see here. So I'm trying to see what he's done. Now
that's kind of a cool track.
It really is, yeah. So one of the tracks, Alan Wilson, if you're familiar with Barbara Motorsports Park, that's the IndyCar track that he has done. He's also done favorites such as Gingerman, Mont Tremblant, Miller Motorsports Park. Oh, did I say that in favorite? Oops. Former IndyCar tracks he's done, NOLA.
He did Pittsburgh, too.
Yes, he did. Yes. So, I mean, Al Wilson's well-known. The one thing about Al Wilson I really like is he makes tracks with super long runoffs. He's done the Roval at Iowa Speedway, Las Vegas Motor Speedway, and the former Pikes Peak International Raceway. So, all right. So next week, we're going to have Eric Brennan on. He is our F4FR America's Insider. They're going to be going to a stretch in Florida. They've got Sebring next weekend, and the weekend after that, they've got Homestead, Miami. They're going to run the road course there. We're going to talk about that, see what the big news is. Can anybody stop Linus Lundqvist in FR Americas? Also, we're going to find something else to talk about. We'll probably break down more of the Nashville announcement as well. Charlie, thanks for joining us. We'll definitely talk to you next time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's all for Inside Open Wheel. Take care, everybody.